Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. You
pod
to win the game. That's the great thing about sports.
You pod to win the game.
All right, welcome into You Pod to Win the Game, presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid. I am Charles Robinson here with Frank Schwab. And Frank, you know, stretch run, injuries happen, drastically changes the playoff outlook. The San Francisco 49ers went out tonight and they signed Josh Johnson from the practice squad of whose practice squad was it?
The Denver Broncos. You gotta poach people off roster.
I'm trying to keep straight where Josh is coming from, since Josh has been on 47.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. Now, they had to do that because Jimmy Garoppolo breaks an ankle. Second season-ending foot injury when you go back to Trey Lance, obviously early in the season. The San Francisco 49ers and Kyle Shanahan beat Miami and Mike McDaniel 33-17, but at an unbelievable cost of their starting quarterback. Do you think this remixes now how we look at the top of the NFC Super Bowl contenders, or is San Francisco's defense and skill position players so good and Jimmy Garoppolo maybe meh enough as a quarterback that they don't fall off as one of the top two or three teams in the NFC?
It's hard. It's hard for me to buy into Mr. Irrelevant this year, taking this team to a Super Bowl, which was clearly in a realm of possibilities with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Sure.
I mean, they looked at many times like a Super Bowl team. It's just hard for me to believe Brock Purdy's that guy. Like, and there's nobody out there who's going to help. I mean, the fact that they went out and got Josh Johnson is like...
It's Josh, right? Don't you think go get Josh? Don't you think... I'm asking you a serious question here because of what he can do, okay? Mm-hmm. Is there not a chance that the reason why you go and get Josh Johnson in this situation is because you think there's a chance he could come in and eventually start for you? You can get him prepared potentially for the postseason because of the fact he can do different things. He can run the football, he can throw the football, and that fits in pretty well with the number of players they can already flex to do different things for San Francisco.
Look, I like him. I like Josh. I think he's had a great story. He's had a great career. As somebody posted this, I forgot, I guess. He was with Harbaugh in college before Harbaugh was even at Stanford. He has had a long run. But Josh Johnson's not moving the needle. I just can't see it. Look, but I mean, I think we do have to take a step back, though. Let's look at this game. Miami's a good team. And San Francisco beat the heck out of them today. I mean, it was 33-17. And Miami just got crushed in this game. Their offense couldn't move the ball, which, okay, whatever. You know, I mean, they're playing without Teron Armstead. They couldn't block, whatever. But the 49ers are moving the ball. Like, they looked pretty good. And to your point, maybe you just need to get the ball to these skill position guys. And me and you both know, I think in a weird way, given the choice, if you gave the choice to Kyle Shanahan of, we'll give you this really, really dynamic playmaker who's not always going to be within the structure of your offense, or we're just going to give you a robot that can run your system, I think Kyle will pick the robot. He'd be like, he doesn't have the upside, but he's going to run my offense. And so can Josh Johnson or Brock Purdy be the guy that just, I'm just going to get the ball to Deebo Samuel, Ayuk, Kittle? Maybe. They did it today. I don't know if Miami was just surprised or let down or whatever. But it's hard. It's very hard for me to sit here and tell you San Francisco's still a Super Bowl contender with whoever they're going to start a quarterback now. It's just one of those blows that, like, maybe they can Trent Green, Kurt Warner this thing, but I just don't see that happening. It's just a bridge too far for me there.
It's like Kyle Shanahan was like, let me go get the backup version of Jimmy G versus Trey Lance and see how this works out. Let me go get these two guys that kind of sort of resemble the two guys I started out with as my starter and backup earlier this season.
It's like when, you know, remember when the Dukes of Hazzard had the strike? Oh, yeah. They brought in Coy Vance. This Coy Vance. That's who we got
Coy
right
Vance,
now.
The cousins.
Brock Purdy and Josh Johnson. Yeah. The replacement Dukes of Hazzard now.
Yeah, the cousins are in town now. Yeah, all I know is I think a lot of people are going to wake up today. They're going to listen to this. They're going to do some box score scouting, or they watched games and they're going to go, holy shit, the Eagles and the Cowboys got to feel really good right now. Yep, like they have to be sitting there going, the monster in the room, that the absolute gargantuan team that you had to deal with was this 49ers defense that was just like a freight train coming on. And, you know, Debo's healthy again, and Christian McCaffrey and Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle. And it's just like, oh, my God, they got everything. And they're picking up guys as they go. And then this happens. Like, it was not to overstate what Jimmy G is worth there. But let's be honest, if you and I had ranked the unlosable players, like, who can they absolutely not afford to lose that would dramatically impact their playoff odds? I know people don't think a lot of the guy, but he had to be top three on every list, if not number one.
Right. Because this is a second quarterback. It's not just one. It's two. And
experienced. It's not just any second quarterback.
Right. And they've won. They're confident. They've won with him before. They've gone to a Super Bowl. They've gone to an NFC Championship game. They know they could do that. Whereas these guys now, I just don't know. I will say this about the 49ers. Look, no matter what, I still think they can hold off Seattle for the division. Seattle's really had its problems lately. Mm-hmm. And then if you get into the playoffs, nobody's going to want to play the 49ers because this defense is nasty. Like, right. It is. You could lose a game 10-9. You know, it's one of those deals. So I don't think the 49ers are drawing dead from, you know, they're not going to win another game. They're not going to go to the playoffs, or they can't win in the playoffs. They could. They could make some noise. It's just, they look like this could be a Super Bowl team, and I just don't think that's there for them anymore.
Why can't Shanahan assistants beat him? Like, why can't I sat there and I'm like, okay, well, somebody's going to solve this guy. Not Sean McVay. Okay. He's had his opportunities, and there's definitely not been Sean. I'm like, maybe it's going to be Mike McDaniel. Maybe this is going to be the one. And you looked at the roster that he brought to the table, and then his guy, his chosen guy who he has faith in and who he's talked up and earned the trust of him, Tua, throws a couple of interceptions, has pretty bad fumble, did not look over the expanse of this game remotely as good as we thought, and he cracked the Frank algorithm, the Frank Tua is an MVP candidate algorithm, because he finally lost the game that he both started and finished for the first time this season.
All season.
Yes, all season. I mean, Tua let Frank down.
Honestly, this was a shocking loss to me. When I saw Jimmy G on the card, I ain't gonna lie, I'm in Colorado, betting is legal here. Might have placed a live wager on the Dolphins, thinking, you know, the algorithm, to speak, it doesn't really catch up with injuries like that too often. I thought, this is money in the bank. I'm so smart. So to watch the Dolphins completely implode against a Brock Purdy-led 49ers team, I thought this was a terrible loss for them. I thought it really exposed them in many ways. I get it. Their starting tackles were out. Teron Armstead is a hugely valuable part of that offense.
Sure.
But if you're a great offense, one non-quarterback should not make that big of a difference. It just shouldn't. I know Teron Armstead's great. He's had a great year. He's had a great impact. But I don't know if you're a great offense, you should be at least a good offense without your left tackle. And they aren't. And then defensively, I mean, their defense is a problem. You know, I mean, people could say now, like, oh, well, you know, we all knew this about the Dolphins. They're not that great. But the Dolphins were in a position to win the AFC East. I just don't see that out of them anymore after today. They're not even clear in the playoff race yet either. Like, they'll probably make the playoffs. there's a scenario where they don't. And I just thought today was a really damaging day for them in taking them from maybe they're a sneaky contender in the AFC to like, no, that ain't this team. No, not losing to Brock Purdy and the 49ers.
Somebody asked me a couple, it was like after Buffalo's last loss, they were like, you know, who do you like in the division? And I was like, I still like Buffalo. And they're like, really? Like, it was like a big, I'm like, man, come on, give me a break. Like, people want to dog Buffalo so fast. And Bradley Chubb gets traded to Miami. And it was remarkable to me because all of a sudden everyone was like, that's it. They are an elite team now. They've got Bradley Chubb. The defense, this is going to be, I'm like, what? I'm like, look, don't get me wrong. Like, it's good to add a pass rushing piece. There's no question. And, you know, he's having an up year with the Broncos, but it wasn't like this is Micah Parsons. You're all of a sudden dropping on Denver's defense. Yeah. I didn't understand that. So I think injuries show a little bit of the warts. I think also, again, what we talked about last week, the second half of the season for NFL teams is different than the first half of the season. And the phrase nut cutting time, there's a reason why that exists in the NFL for December going into January. And we're going to see some teams, I think, unexpectedly have some problems this month.
Sorry, guys. I hate to butt in here, but the Frank algorithm on Tua stands because Tua did not finish the game.
Thompson came in. He did have that ankle injury, Charles. He had a
brief ankle injury reportedly nothing after the game. So Skylar Thompson finished the game.
What was the score?
Still undefeated.
What was the score?
I don't remember. It was overwhelming. Let's swing it to the next game because the common thread with these two games is the Buffalo Bills. I'll talk about that in a second. Yeah. The Cincinnati Bengals win 27-24. They're 3-0 against the Chiefs the last two seasons counting playoffs. I thought this was let's talk about the Bills real quick first. The Bills are sitting at home on Sunday after winning on Thursday. They watch the Miami Dolphins, who is still a big-time contender in the AFC East, just implode at San Francisco. And they also watch the Kansas City Chiefs lose. The Kansas City Chiefs, before this game at Cincinnati, which was a tough game, they had the easiest remaining schedule in the NFL. This was basically last call for a Chiefs loss that you could just mark down. You never know it's going to happen. I get that. But if the Chiefs won today, they might have just won out and the Buffalo Bills would have no shot at that number one seed. Well, now the Bills are back in play. Both teams 9-3. Let's talk about the Bengals first because I thought this was really, really impressive because I'm sitting there. They ran a terrible fourth and one play. They tried to run a jet sweep. They got blown up. Tyler Boyd, it was terrible. Just awful. Like, sneak it. Okay. What are you doing?
Someone was supposed to block down on Dunlap, right?
Or, I mean, he looked like he beat the snap. It was an unbelievable play by Dunlap. But then Tyler Boyd drops a pass. Literally, he's not going to drop the rest of his career. Just hits him right in the hands.
Did you see how pissed Burrow was after he dropped that pass? I love the replay that showed Burrow's face. Just like, my God, dude.
And then, you know, Mahomes scores on the fourth and goal from, I think it was the 3-yard line, which I thought Andy was really risking it there.
Yeah.
And I think most other teams in the NFL at that point against the Kansas City Chiefs, they kind of pack it in at that point. They said, we're done. Well, okay, Mahomes got us. What can you do? But the Bengals are just not scared of the Chiefs. They are not intimidated at all. Outscored them 10-0 in the fourth quarter. I thought this was a great win for the Bengals. And on a day where Lamar Jackson goes out with a knee injury, all of a sudden, the Bengals might be that team that's ascending. If they could win this division, get a home game to start, I think that they're a better team than they were last year when they went to the Super Bowl. Now, they might not catch every break to get to the Super Bowl, but this was a huge win for them, I thought, just in, hey, we're not backing down to the Chiefs. We're not backing down to anybody, even when we're losing in the fourth quarter after we've made some really bad mistakes.
Go watch the fourth quarter of this game for the people who are listening and haven't, when it gets replayed on NFL Network or whatever, or if you have it on your DVR. It is wonderful. And it was funny because, you know, Mike Jones, obviously another national writer, and I were at the Houston game, but we're watching this at the, you know, after we're writing and we're watching the game at the same time. And I said to Mike, I said, you know, I love Burrow much more as a Patrick Mahomes foil than Herbert, because, you know, Herbert, it was like both Herbert and Josh Allen. It was like, and I like Josh Allen as well, but I think when we got to the third guy, it was like, okay, Josh and Mahomes, these guys are going to be owning it the next 10 years going back and forth. That's great. But that third foil kind of became Justin Herbert because he looks like those guys. He's tall, he's long, got a big arm, makes throws that are ridiculous with minimal effort, all this stuff. actually the guy I like more is it's Burrow. And this fourth quarter is a great example because when you watch him, number one, he does it differently than those guys. Okay. He's not just, when you see him in person, he's taller than you think, but it's not like he's this tall, massive framed guy, super long, just has this like easy, simple stroke. And he just looks different than the two, and talking about Mahomes and Allen, but then he does it differently on the field than those two. He just is like, he digs himself a hole. He digs himself out of the hole. He's like doing the thing where he's snapping in the air and he's like, he's cocky as shit. And he's just, nothing phases him. You know, it's that's why I thought it was funny when Boyd dropped that touchdown. It's just, he's pissed, but you're like, yeah, he ain't gonna give a shit. Like, he's gonna come back out. He's gonna be gunning it. Like, I just enjoyed it so much. And I thought, man, if the next 10 years, and you know, Herbert will fit in there too, but if this is what the AFC is gonna be, it's gonna be like Mahomes and Allen and Burrow, and eventually Herbert gets to that point. There's so much fun just to watch go at it. And the passes that, you know, Burrow was hitting when he was hitting them. Now, I'll be fair here. Magnificent skill position pieces. Of course, we all know that with Cincinnati. I mean, there's no doubt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even Ja'Marr Chase coming back with a jacked up hip and a labrum and whatever still looks fantastic on the field the second he walks out there. But I just think it's the mentality of, especially Kansas City, Buffalo, and a grooving Cincinnati, which is what we're getting right now. In that groove, I think Burrow's right. We're sliding into the groove we got into last year. He feels it. Mm-hmm. They're just never out of it. Teams, they're just going to keep coming and coming and coming. You might beat them, but it's not going to be because, you know, they just, as you said, go up. You know, it's, man, Mahomes broke us. This is what Mahomes needs. That's what I personally think. I mean, Mahomes is so good. He's so clearly an MVP. You just always got to have a couple of these guys just coming for him constantly.
Yeah. Do you think Bengals could win a Super Bowl? They're that team that's coming on late. And they last year was a surprise. Last year, they really weren't that great this time of year. They lost at home to the San Francisco 49ers in overtime. And I think they were 7-5 at that point.
Yeah.
And I was like, eh, they're all right. This year does feel different. This year feels like, I don't know what the heck happened to them on Monday Night Football against the Browns a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
One of the worst performances of the entire season. And that kind of threw me off the scent. I was like, all right, the Bengals aren't that good, whatever. That you can't play like that and be a good team. They've been excellent since then. And this just seems like an ascending team.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'll give you a couple of things that I like about it. Samaje Perine. Okay. You're starting to get some other pieces. Mm-hmm. Mixon goes out with concussion. But, oh, you got some depth. This guy's actually doing some stuff, you know? Yeah, like,
he was really good in this game.
Oh, he looked really good in this game. So you're like, whoa, wait a minute. Here's a little depth piece we didn't know about. Ja'Marr Chase goes down. T. Higgins steps into the number one wide receiver spot and looks like a number one wide receiver. I think some of the struggles and adversity, plus what happened last year, you know how it is. Like, teams build confidence. They learn how to, like, deal with losses. They learn how to deal with injuries. And then as some of those things pile up, some of the depth on the team steps into roles and goes, wait a minute, I could be a dude too. I can be this guy. And so, hey, you know what? You want to go out and double Ja'Marr Chase? T. Higgins is sitting there going, yeah, well, you know, guess what? I was the number one for a couple of weeks. I got no problem. Go ahead, throw it to me. Let's go. You know, Mixon gets banged up. If Perine, if this kind of game is what you saw, you know, if this is who Perine can be for them, I mean, we'll see. But if it can be, all of a sudden you have another guy who's sitting there going, yeah, no problem. Mixon's out. I can be the dude. Go ahead. Let's go. I think it's just that the sort of scar tissue that builds up in a positive way for franchises as they learn how to become a winner. And I think, to me, if they run, let's say they do it again, they run the table in the playoffs, they face Kansas City, be a beginner, whoever, and they go to the Super Bowl, I like them a lot better this time with this experience going against Dallas or, you know, the Eagles or whoever
Brock
else
Purdy,
rolls in.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. That Brock Purdy-led San Francisco 49ers team. I do. I like them a lot better having that experience.
Yeah. And again, I just feel, I just wish I hadn't been thrown off by that Browns game. I literally watch that Browns game. Bengals just are frauds. They're not good. Look at this team. No, they're really, really good. And I mean, hats off to them. And I think before we move on, one real interesting race the rest of the way that might determine who wins the Super Bowl is the Chiefs and Bills trying to win out. Like, I mean, it sounds weird to say, hey, Bills, you're going to have to win your last five games to get the number one seed in the AFC. But that's probably what they're going to have to do. The Chiefs schedule the rest of the way. Maybe they just lose because they get upset. But they're going to be easily favored in the rest of their games. So it's going to be really interesting. Again, only one team gets a bye. But now the Bills are back in that driver's seat because they got the head-to-head tiebreaker.
All right, let's move on to the next one. Jets. New York Jets had a big test, obviously going up to Minnesota, coming off of Mike White's big sort of coronation after replacing Zach Wilson. They go into Minnesota. They lose 29-22 in a game that, you know, people are going to look at Mike White's box score. They're going to go, wow, he threw a lot of yards, threw a couple of picks. Oh, geez, maybe he didn't play that well. Plus, they lose the game. I don't know, man. There's all those games where you felt like going into the fourth, Minnesota's going to, they're on their way. The Jets, it's, you know, whatever. They lost it in this one. They lost control of it. The Jets make a game of it, obviously, in the fourth quarter. Mike White, a couple of times, takes them down the field. You're thinking, oh, man, okay, the Jets, they got a chance to come back and snatch this game. Minnesota puts it away defensively, late picking White off. I thought it was an interesting game because, to me, there are really two things that happened. Number one, you know how much I like the Jets defense. You know how much I like the Jets defense even more when they're confident and they're like, hey, the quarterback's not going to kill us. We're going to actually score some points. I think it means something that Kirk Cousins looked like crap in this game. He did not look good. Like, people are going to look at the numbers, not understand how bad he looked early on in this game. Watch the first quarter of the game. Watch Kirk Cousins. You're going to be like, oh, my God. I think that he didn't have his best game. And they still were able to pull this out, even though they made it close again in the fourth quarter. I mean, at this point, they're kind of a dangerous team when you get to the playoffs just because they're always sort of weirdly geared toward pulling a game out in the fourth quarter, you know?
Every single week.
It's crazy. They, like, let teams back in to then pull it out in the fourth quarter. So it's – I don't know what to think of Minnesota because of the way they play. It's so, like – such a seesaw, you know, experience. But again, in this NFC, I'm like, nobody wants to believe Minnesota. Everybody looks at the record and they're like, oh, it's still Kirk. It's still Kirk. It's Kirk. I don't know, man. Like, Brock Purdy. We're going to get to
October.
There's only going to be a couple of guys where you look at quarterbacks in the NFC or really the totality of how some of these other teams, like, you know, Tampa makes it. You're going to go, yeah, great. They got Tom, but look at how they play. Yeah, right. So I don't know, man. Minnesota might be in a weird way setting itself up to have some postseason success here by playing games close and getting used to what that feeling is.
Real quick, I just want to talk about the Jets because I do wonder if they fell in love with the Mike White thing a little too much. I get 57 attempts is more game script.
In terms of jacket is, definitely.
Yeah, like, you don't want, but I get that. That was kind of game script. But I thought the key part of this game was they have third and goal to 1 yard line in the fourth quarter.
Right.
They can punch it in. They throw an awful fade pass. I think it was to Garrett Wilson. Yeah. It's like, that was pretty dumb. You just wasted a play. And then on fourth, they drop Mike White back again. He throws it behind Braxton Berrios. Now, we can argue maybe Berrios should have caught it. He got his hands on it, but it was a bad ball.
It was a tough catch.
Right. Yeah, it was. So I'm just like, what are you doing? Quarterback sneak it twice. You're going to score. Like, what on earth are you thinking there, throwing twice with Mike White? But I think they're kind of, ooh, we got this shiny new toy. He's still Mike White. It's still, I get they have running back injuries too. So you can't really rely on that. And again, game script was a big part of this. But don't fall in love too much with Mike White there, Jets, because I don't think that's really your long-term ticket. The Vikings are just really starting to get interesting to me because, like you said, it's kind of this, They kind of screw it up in the fourth quarter and then they come back and win. And you're like, what do I make of this? What do I make of the Minnesota Vikings?
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is they're 10-2. It's still a fairly good chance to get the number one seed. If the NFC East starts to lose some games, at very least they're going to host a playoff game. And they have one of the top five players in the NFL, Justin Jefferson. He can carry you a long way. They have other pieces, Dalvin Cook. And I don't trust their defense necessarily, but when you're at some point, we can't just keep saying, like we did about Tennessee last year, you can't just keep, oh, this team's a fraud, they're not as good as, well, you're 10-2, and that's really hard to do in the NFL. They have an ability to win games, and it's hard to quantify that, and it's one of those things that analytics people are never going to believe. I'm not sure even I do, but they win games. They find ways to win games. They keep winning games. And I guess maybe there's a skill involved in that. Maybe Kevin O'Connell kind of knows how to manage these games late. I don't know what it is, but it seems like every Minnesota Vikings game is exactly the same, where you come out of it going, yeah, they won. Good for them to win, but it could have been better. I don't know. This is just who they are. It's not going to get better. This is who the Minnesota Vikings are. It's not like I saw somebody tweet like, oh, you know, they're going to put it together at some point. All these wins are who they are. They're a flawed team, but in the NFC, yeah, maybe they can make a run.
I think it's as simple as, in terms of a win or loss. Let's talk of the playoffs. Like, can they win or lose a game in the playoffs? Let's start simple.
Yeah. They start home.
If they don't, well, not only that, I mean, it depends on who they face. If they face a team that really can't hit Kirk, I mean, they're going to lose. Like, the team that plays Minnesota is going to lose, because if you're not hitting Kirk Cousins, he's a completely different quarterback. And you can say prime time or what, oh, he's this, he can't do this or that when the lights are on or the pressure, you know, all these other things stack up. I think it's as simple as his comfort level. If you can hit him, you have a really good chance of beating the Minnesota Vikings, or at the very least putting them in some kind of a complicated hole that they're going to have an issue getting out of at some point in the game. If you can't hit him, we'd have to look at what the NFC field looks like and say, who are the weaker pass rush teams? If they get a top seed, they could probably play one of these teams in the NFC that might not have the greatest pass rush. I think they're going to have an absolute opportunity to win a playoff game. Then I think once they win one playoff game, I don't know. And these things start to get a little more interesting.
So, I mean, look, their path might be who's beat it? The NFC stinks this year, especially if San Francisco can't keep this up. All of a sudden, you might have to play, you know, the Giants, your first playoff game or something like that. You can beat them. Like, why not?
I think so.
And then all you need to do is once you get to the, you know,
Washington
deep in the playoffs.
Washington had a good defense, though. But I mean,
they do. They're solid. But yeah, I think Minnesota's in a really interesting place where nobody's paying attention to them. Nobody is giving, me included. I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender. I'll say that right now. But who cares? They're 10-2. Like, at some point, it just doesn't matter. They've won a lot of games, and maybe they can get this thing going. I don't know. Maybe they just find ways to win. Let's move on to the next game, which one of these two teams is going to be in the playoffs, unfortunately. The Washington Commanders, New York Giants tie 20-20. You love tie games, don't you? That's your thing? Like, you're a big fan?
Think we should even put these in the freaking podcast. I don't. I think if you tie, you forfeit your right for us to even.
You forfeit. You get kicked off the pod.
Because what are we talking? Who cares? It's like nothing happened. You shouldn't have showed up. Nobody all the week. That didn't mean anything. It means a little bit in the percentages at the end. Unless there
a little
was,
bit. I, oh, listen, you're, yeah. This listen, is, this I is think crazy it, talk. But whatever,
I listen
on.
To me. I think from now on, there should be a rule that if there is a tie, unless there is a injury in the game that's important, we no longer talk about the side
games. Or if Donovan McNabb forgets the rules of tie games.
Right. If someone is dumb, if someone is staring why did the game end?
I'm going to reel you back in here, Charles, because a half win was not a bad outcome for either of these teams.
God. Okay.
It's not. They're both going for a playoff berth here. Washington comes back late. They tie it. They go to overtime. The Giants punt from midfield really late in overtime, which surprised me a little bit. But I think Brian Daboll is a smart guy, and he's like, whatever, a half win is not bad right here. Nobody's going to say that after the game. Nobody's going to be excited about it. But they all know, hey, we're a half game closer to making the playoffs. Both of these teams. It wasn't the worst outcome. It's unsatisfying for us, for any fans, anything like that, for even the players. But I think that both of these, the people in charge of these teams know, it's okay. It's okay to get a tie game in this situation and not fall back closer to the Detroit Lions in the wild card race.
Not finishing.
Do you disagree? Do you disagree with this?
Not
or
finishing.
Like a half widget
not,
just be mar-
not
wiped
finishing
off.
Or finishing halfway is unsatisfying in every walk of life. I just want to go ahead and leave that out there. Everybody out there, anything you want to finish, if you half finish it, you're not going to be all that happy. So I look, fine. We'll play the percentages game.
It's not the percentages game. It's a freaking standings.
But that's what we're talking about. We're talking about winning percentage. We're talking about winning percentage.
Yes,
right?
It's honest. Like, I get it. It stinks, tie game, blah, blah, blah. It's not a bad outcome for either team. Like, they're going to play each other again in 2 weeks. whoever wins that one's going to, if one of them does win, they're going to be in really good shape in the wild card race. They neither one loses a half game to Seattle or Detroit or whatever.
I just, two things, one for each team. Number one, the Giants look a little sloppier on offense in this game than I expected. I think, did you see the play in the backfield where it was like everybody ran into each other at once? It was like, you know, and you're like, yeah, this is kind of the stuff that was clean earlier in the season that, you know, allowed you to play mistake-free football. You kind of want to see that. And for Washington, like, when is Chase Young going to play? Okay.
Yeah, like that's getting concerning, isn't it?
It's every single week. It's like, oh, well, Chase Young, might play this week. He might play this week. Oh, Chase Young's out. Like today, I remember I was kind of checking in to see, okay, well, he's on the field. He's warming up. He's, you know, out there before the game. And then he doesn't play. And it's just like, okay, this could be a guy who could potentially help you. You know, who knows if he comes in and he's rocking it like early Chase Young in his career, it'd be a big deal once the postseason gets here if you can get him into that gear. But yeah, I keep waiting and it's getting frustrating. All right, let's take a break for a moment. Hear a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, welcome back. Let's move on to the next one. I was actually at this game. The Cleveland Browns beat
the Houston. You're the one.
One person there. The Cleveland Browns beat the Houston Texans 27-14. Deshaun Watson's big return to the NFL from his 11-game suspension. Months ago, I remember saying, like, hey, this is going to be a circus. The league doesn't want this. They don't want his first game back in Houston, where many of his accusers in the civil lawsuits, you know, live and reside. And you know, it was, I think, less than 7%. The league made sure less than 7% of its national viewing audience could access this game. It was just so crazy. You know, it's basically like, we're not going to allow people to see Deshaun Watson back in his first game. Okay, you show up at this game, okay? And I'm just going to tell you, it was just dead. There was nobody.
Yeah, it was crazy. You tweeted crazy. That picture, and it was shocking. It was
shocking. Getting there was great. I mean, I was like, all right, well, how, you know, what time do I want to show up to the game? Let me get there couple hours early, you know, to mm-hmm. see what's going on. I figured, thinking like, okay, well, we'll see if there's protests or whatever's going to happen with Watson. I show up and there's like a quarter of one parking lot has got cars in it. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? There's nobody here. I get out and it's all Browns people. It's all Browns fans. Everybody, I see Watson jerseys everywhere. It's just, I'm just completely perplexed. I stood out in the parking lot for a while, finally went in. I see a couple other national writers. We're kind of like, we're just like, what is going on? There's nobody here. None of this has come to fruition. No one seems to care in terms of, you know, this idea that it could be this controversial game or whatever. Head back out again, second time, just to check it. Nothing. There's just nothing at all happened. There's Texans fans rocking Deshaun Watson's jerseys. There's Browns fans rocking Deshaun Watson's jerseys. At one point, it was funny because Mark Maskey and I from the Washington Post were standing there. We're talking. We're kind of scanning to see if, you know, anything's going to happen. A guy comes up and he's wearing a Watson jersey, a Texans Watson jersey. It has a piece of tape over the nameplate and it says weirdo instead of Watson. So you're thinking, okay, well, this is one person clearly who has first thing out of his mouth. Oh no, I like Deshaun. I'm just like, okay, well, apparently all this whole, this hand wringing and like, well, what's going to happen? And it was 100% either fully deflated by it or somewhat deflated by the fact that the Texans are just a terrible team. No one in Houston cares about them anymore. Total apathy. And then you watch them on the field and you're like, this is some of the worst football you can possibly see. They get beaten by two defensive touchdowns. And by the way, they were just god-awful plays by the Texans. And then a special teams touchdown as well. And my most enjoyable part of this game, I'm going to tell you to check this out later. John McClain, longtime mm-hmm. Houston Texans beat writer. Please Frank, go and find John's Twitter feed and start at the beginning of the game and read it through the game, because it is the stuff of beat writer dreams. It is that moment where you're like, I no longer care. I'm going to say every single thing I think about this team as the game goes on. We are on the opposite side of the press roll. Every time something bad happened on the field, we're all refreshing John's Twitter feed just to see the next thing John would say. He lit the Texans up. It was wild.
That's awesome. Since you were there, by the way, John's a great follow. Since you were there, I mean, look, I'm watching on TV, and I'm sure you're going to agree with this. Because we got, look, I do hate talking about Deshaun Watson as a football player because it just seems so trite at some point. But whatever, they're playing games. He's our quarterback. He looked awful in this game.
Like, yeah,
but I guess that's for 23 months off and not really playing with your teammates or anything like that. But I was actually shocked. I thought he was going to have a good game because the Texans are so bad, honestly. And he, you know, maybe he has, revenge, whatever, which is kind of nonsense. But that's how these guys think. But no, he was terrible. What did you see? And what about the post game? I mean, you were there, you know, listening to Deshaun after. I just want to get your impressions for being there about the whole Deshaun Watson debut, basically.
He looked a lot to me the way that he looked when I saw him in when I saw him in training camp. Like, I saw him in training camp and I was like, he does not look good. Like, he looks completely out of rhythm. He looks rusty. He looks like a player who has not really had a lot of competitive stuff going on for a really long time. I thought that would maybe be worked out at this point, you know, because obviously there's an expanse of time. Of course, he was out of the building for a lot of the suspension. But no, he's skipping passes. Like, it was funny because at one point,
terribly on some passes.
Not even sailing close. Some. The one that he skipped, by the way, he was throwing to, I think it was either Chubb or Hunt. It was a running back in the flat. When you watch the play, clearly it was designed, let's get Deshaun an easy pass. Like, let's just get him. Let's get him an easy pass to hit. He skips it in front of him like 3 yards. I mean, just horribly. You're like, did that even make it halfway to the running back? So I thought he looked remarkably mediocre. And the first thought that came to mind was this offense looked a lot better with Jacoby Brissett running it. Like, you know,
yeah,
now it's.
Yeah. You're right. You're totally right.
It's one game. Right. And Kevin Stefanski said afterward that he said that. He used the word, you know, he agreed that he thought Deshaun looked jittery. And even though Deshaun was sort of like, you know, no, I wasn't nervous or I wasn't this or I wasn't that, he also said he felt every one of and this was like his phrasing, that he felt every one of those 700 plus days that he was, you know, out of football. So if we're, you know, again, we're just talking about the football aspect of it, I think there was a hurdle here. The first hurdle was, of course, getting him reinstated into the building, practicing. The second hurdle was having Houston circled on the calendar for months now, getting past the Houston game and trying to now move on as a football player and figure it out. But they have a ton of work to do. And there was a point in this game where you're sort of like, could Houston really win this game? Like,
they couldn't score. That's my problem.
They're just completely inept on offense. To answer your question about the post game, it was a slightly more expansive version of Deshaun talking about football the way he did earlier in the week, but now he had a game to talk about. He was asked, Jenny Vrentas from the New York Times is there, who's done a ton of amazing work on everything that's been going on around Deshaun. You know, she asked him at one point very pointedly, like, you know, even though you're saying clinically you can't talk about these things, or you're saying, you know, legally you can't talk about some of these things, can you at least, and I'm paraphrasing her here, at least address whether or not you have remorse over what got you suspended. And he wasn't going to engage that. And it just, to me, it fortifies my thought process that he's done. Like, he's done talking about this. He's never going to talk about this again. It's over. He has moved on. And if he does talk about it, it's going to be in a scripted, friendly environment. And that's it. But otherwise, I think this idea of all these other things in terms of the civil suits and the settlements, unless he gets into court. And remember, there's two civil suits that are still outstanding. That's the only way he's ever going to speak again on this, is if he ends up in a courtroom on a witness stand. Otherwise, it's done.
Yeah, interesting. The one stray thought I had on Watson here before we move on to the next game was just, It might just be rust, and he's fine. Because Deshaun, whatever we want to say about him, he's one of the most talented quarterbacks in the world. Like, he really is. But A, I wonder if that long of a layoff does just rob you of something and you never get it back. And I also wonder, look, quarterback is a very fickle position in some ways, and it's very confidence-based. And not that anybody should feel sorry for Deshaun Watson, but when you've had this long of a time getting just dragged in public, doesn't that, like, you know, you said when you were talking about him feeling all 700 days, I wondered if you were going to say, and not that he would say this, but I felt all of like the eyes on me of like, you know, now he's the villain of the NFL. And I don't know what that does to a guy. I don't know. I don't know if that affects you on the field for the rest of your career, knowing that everybody hates me. Everybody hates me now. He's got to know that. He has to know that. Like, it'd be impossible for him not to know. And I just wonder if that affects his career. Again, I don't feel sorry for him, but that's just a fact.
First and foremost, I can tell you, Browns fans don't hate him. Like, it's, you know, and I know that from, you know, I have Browns fans in you know, Don's family, right? Mm-hmm. And I have Browns fans that, you know, I know other people that are friends, and we connect over Twitter. There are a lot of Browns fans who listen to this podcast. I saw a ton of Browns fans at this game. They certainly do not hate him. And when the game ended, I will say the one thing that was interesting to me. So I went out on the field the last couple minutes of the fourth quarter. As soon as the game ends, I made sure I get on the field, run on the field, and I'm standing right there with Watson, a couple other guys. Albert Breer was there as well. And as he runs off, the only people that remained were Browns fans. They all remained and they stayed. They surrounded the tunnel. And it was a very triumphant moment, for lack of a better term. If you didn't know anything else about what had happened or this guy or anything else, is say you come from Mars and you land at midfield and you watch this guy run off, you'd be like, wow, this guy's a hero. Like, that's how people are treating him. Yeah, I mean, it was striking. And I think I saw Albert Breer was taping it, like, as Watson ran off. So there's tape of it. You can see it. And I think it's emblematic of how at least some segment of Browns fans, I'm not going to say everyone because there's different people, but some segment of Browns fans very much embraces him. But I will also say this, and I think you would agree with me. There's rust. There's 2 years of layoff. There's all these different things. We saw how Russell Wilson was embraced when he went into Denver. He was going to be the greatest thing ever, and he was wonderful and all stuff. If what we saw Sunday with Deshaun is in any way representative in terms of how he finishes the season, if this has got to get a lot better, it has to get a lot better than what it was on Sunday. I'm just telling you, like, it's people and fans are fickle. And if he does the Russell Wilson show in Denver, which everyone's going to say,
he has less than no goodwill.
Not even
Russell Wilson coming in like,
yeah,
well, you haven't accomplished anything here, but at least you're a good guy. Like, Deshaun doesn't have that.
Frank,
like,
yeah. The thing is, people are going to listen to that and they're going to go, no way, that's ridiculous. Well, that's what we would have said about Russ, right? If you told me that when I went through camp in August, I would have been like, you are smoking crack. Like, you are out of your mind. And now here I am going, yeah, they're probably going to have to fire the head coach. Yeah, they're going to have to do something dramatic to fix things with Russ. I don't think it's totally out of the realm of possibility that 700 days off, which we've never, you know, Michael Vick, obviously we saw it with
He's kind of the comp, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he had a long layoff and he came back and he was a very good player. I think Deshaun's going to ultimately, as a football player, be completely fine.
Really? I don't know that that's a sure thing. I really don't. I
don't
think he will, but because he's young. But again, I think you're downplaying the confidence thing here. Like, when you don't have that swagger quarterback anymore, when you've kind of just had your entire reputation thrown into garbage like he has, I just think it changes things. That's really all. We'll see. We'll obviously see how this goes along. All right, let's swing it ahead. Let's get through these games quick. Dallas Cowboys on Sunday night. This game was 21-19 going into the fourth quarter. You're like, wow, Cowboys are on the ropes a little bit. No, they scored 33 unanswered points in the fourth quarter, beat the Colts 54-19. All I really got to say about the Colts are terrible. Jeff Saturday, I guess, ain't it, obviously. But this is what I keep saying when I talk about the Cowboys. The Cowboys might be the best team in football. This is what I mean. Like, when they get it cooking like this, they bring a lot to the table, and there's no real weakness with this team. This is a very, very good football team that can win a Super Bowl.
I'm going to reiterate, when the Cowboys are clicking and they're running with both Zeke and Tony Pollard, they look unstoppable. Like they've that offense, at very least the offense looks unstoppable. It's, and that balance is something for the longest time we were like, when are they going to figure this out? When they're going to figure out how good Tony Pollard is, mm-hmm. and
who figure got to start that, tonight, by the way, first time Zeke Elliott ever came off the bench in his career.
Yep. Yeah. Got to start. And, you know, so you have between those two players, I think it was 168 rushing yards between those two players, just rushing the ball. I think they chipped in like almost like 29, 30 yards catching the ball. But I mean, talking about 200 yards of offense between just those two guys, that makes the offense exponentially better. CeeDee Lamb is doing his thing. Michael Gallup now all of a sudden becomes a guy who catches a couple touchdowns in the red zone. Dalton Schultz is filling the role that he fills. Tyron Smith, by the way, is coming back. Jason Peters starts at left tackle. They dump, they move Tyler Smith inside to guard because they're preparing for Tyron Smith to come back in that left tackle spot. So you're like, oh, whoa, they're getting healthier with a really good player. And when that offense is that good, as we saw in the fourth quarter against the Colts, it puts so much pressure on an opposing team where you can literally take a game and it can get completely out of control in one quarter. Now, granted, as you said, not a great Colts team. Okay. That's they are
the
Vikings, what they are.
The Colts, Cowboys did the same thing to the Vikings.
They did.
And they're 10-2. Like, this is a good team. I don't think people are really, really, but you don't hear the buzz for the Cowboys like you think you would for a Cowboys team that I think is absolutely a Super Bowl. You don't hear that kind of buzz. Like they were this past week, they were 9-1 to win a Super Bowl over at BetMGM. Like 9-1? Really? This team, the 49ers have better odds. And I understand the 49ers love before Jimmy injury, but man, don't sleep on this Cowboys team. This Cowboys team is really good.
I almost hit you up with the Jimmy G injury, and I was going to be like, hey, what are the Cowboys guys real quick? Look.
Shut up. I'd have jumped on it, man. Yeah, check. Cowboys got a shot at this thing, man.
All right, let's swing it over to the other team that I think in the NFC obviously is going to be right there and giving Dallas. I think Dallas is going to have its hands full with them. I think San Francisco, depending on how that offense moves along. The Philadelphia Eagles, beat the brakes off the Tennessee Titans, 35-10. I watched this game and I'm thinking Jalen Hurts extension because I'm like, man, he's going into the last year of his rookie deal. They're going to have to extend this guy, and I just don't know how they're going to get out. I mean,
monumental. And he's like Dak. You don't have the fifth year with him.
No,
you don't have the fifth because he wasn't a first-round pick. Yeah.
No. Same exact scenario with Dak. You got a short period here where you got to turn it pretty fast. Now, they can go through the fourth year, obviously, in 2023, franchise them. How long do you want to play this out? And they also have the added sort of thought process in their minds. It's like, hey, we paid Wentz after 3 years. And that turned out maybe we slow play this one a little more than we did then. But look, Hurts in this game was just an absolute maniac. Throws a couple touchdown passes. A.J. Brown was amazing. Didn't have to run it as much in this game. Did score a touchdown running as well. But I just think, given the Derrick Henry game, Derrick Henry did not have a great game here. Ryan Tannehill had more rushing yards. Now that they're starting to make those additions defensively, right? Then Jordan Davis getting back in the fold and all these things. You start to wonder like, ooh, are they going to get far more stout defensively up front with these additions that are going to gel down the stretch? And, what is that ultimately going to mean for the playoff odds of the Eagles? Would you put the Eagles in terms of your favorites without looking at Vegas odds, just you, would you favor the Eagles or the Cowboys right now?
I think Philly, because I think they're going to have home field advantage. So, it's kind of a cop-out because I honestly, at this point, I think these teams are so equally, just evenly balanced, all that. I just think that the game they play on December 24th, I think it is, and whatever game they hopefully play in the playoffs is just going to be awesome. It's just going to be awesome football. I think these are clearly now the two best teams in the NFC. Real quick, I just want to, very quickly, because you're a voter, I saw people talking about, Jalen Hurts is your MVP now. Shannon Sharp in particular was like, yeah, I think it's clear Jalen Hurts is your MVP. I'm like, can we not be such a prisoner of the moment? Like, Patrick Mahomes easily should be the MVP favorite in my mind. But you as a voter, how close is Jalen Hurts to Mahomes? Is Jalen Hurts ahead of Mahomes? Where do you go with that?
It's early December. I still think it's, unless someone is just absolutely running away with it, I would say that I still feel like in my mind, and I haven't drilled down on it yet. I like to make calls and talk to different people who face both players and all these different things. I would put Mahomes as a leader right now, but, you know, Hurts is, if I'm sitting there and I'm saying, okay, who's going to weigh into this call? It's Mahomes is going to be right there. Hurts is going to be close. There'll be, you know, I might have thought Tua up until now. Tua obviously hits a pothole, you know, but I do think in terms of the quarterbacks, I don't think, let's see how Josh Allen finishes, guys. Like they're 9-3. He's accounted for 30 touchdowns in 12 games. From a volume standpoint, he's handling, I think, almost more volume offense than any other player in the league in terms of one player driving the volume of his team, both rushing and passing. I mean, it's and you know, similar to what Hurts is, but so let's not get ahead of ourselves there. I think it's fine to talk about Hurts as being an MVP candidate, but I just this idea where it's like it's December 4th, he has to be the MVP.
I just think Mahomes has such a big lead that it just today didn't work out for the Chiefs, and
there's a month of football left.
Yeah, there's a lot of football. the Allen piece of that's really interesting too. Moving ahead to a quarterback who's not going to be on anybody's MVP ballot. Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos lose again, 10-9. The Broncos stink. We don't got to talk about them anymore. The key part of this game, Lamar Jackson goes out with a knee injury, and John Harbaugh terms it as days to weeks. Tells us nothing, John. Thanks a lot. But I assume Lamar's probably going to miss some time with this. Tyler Huntley, who played really, really well last year, and he had to fill in for Lamar, did not look that good in this game, but he pulled it together for the game-winning drive at the end, which is a huge win for the Ravens. I mean, the Bengals are coming on strong, and I don't think Ravens can really afford any losses here. But you know, what I wrote for winners and losers was basically, look, I'm not on the Lamar lost his bet on himself. No, Lamar's going to make a ton of money from somebody. Come on. Like Carson Wentz is getting $22 million this year. Lamar Jackson's going to be just fine, all right? But this contract year is not going well for Lamar. It started great. It's not all his fault. I mean, the Ravens really did nothing to help him. But this year is not going that well for Lamar since about the first 3-4 games of the season. And now he's hurt. And it's just not working out, I'm sure, as he or the Ravens even hoped.
Dak broke his foot, okay?
Right, even more than that. His foot was sideways on his body.
His foot was jacked, okay? Yeah. He left on a cart crying, okay? Right. He made his money. Okay, it was like, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
But you saw that on Twitter, right? Like everybody today dunking on Lamar.
Come on, man. That's just, can we stop worrying about, listen, okay, we're all content monkeys for Elon Musk now, okay? Just get used to it. Nobody's right or wrong on Twitter. Guess what? We're all idiots now. There's not some idiots. There's not a few idiots. We're all the idiots. Everybody who has remained and continued to give free content to Elon Musk, we are now all the idiots, okay? So forget Twitter. Stop worrying about what they're, you know, dunking on Lamar and saying this or saying that. He's going to get his money, whatever.
Just fine.
This game is, okay, Lamar went off hurt. It's not been a good season. Guess what? They'll bring them back next year on the franchise tag. Who cares? And if there is a holdout or some kind of contract thing in the offseason, whatever. We'll go through that. It's going to be fine. They're not letting him go. And if they do let him go and he's a free agent, holy shit, I can't imagine the number of teams that are going to step up to sign him, and he's going to get whatever oodles of money he wants. To me, I watched this game and I was like, two things. Number one, I liked Huntley a lot when he filled in last year. I actually think he's got a chance if there's another sustained run here where he could continue to develop himself as a player. I thought when he had his run last time, I'm like, maybe this guy might eventually be able to develop into a starter. This could be another step toward that. But even though this was a bad start, but what was important and what I think if you are a Broncos fan has to be devastating is the skill position pieces around Caleb Huntley are no better, if not worse, than what is around Russell Wilson, okay? Now, you can bicker about the offensive lines or whatever, but when he had to have it, when he had to go and score a touchdown to win a game, he did it. Mm-hmm. He made all these plays, you know, especially when you talk about, go look at 40 yards and in on that last touchdown. If I'm a Broncos, when I saw it, I was just like, oh my God, if I'm a Broncos fan, and I know you're already pissed and devastated as it is now. Now I'm kind of understand. Like, I'm like, this is just stupid. This feels dumb. Like, there's nothing. And I've said what I had to say about Nathaniel Hackett. I cannot explain this right now. And it is so consistently mind numbingly poor on offense. I don't know how you can look at Russ and Nathaniel Hackett and go, yeah, both of them stay. And we know if the answer is both of them don't stay, we know who doesn't stay. So it's just, it's almost to me, it feels like inevitable. It really does. It feels like inevitably has inevitability has kicked in. And if you're an owner, if you're the new owners of the Denver Broncos,
didn't hire this guy.
Who did not hire this guy.
For that. They weren't even watching when they hired him.
If you know anything about football at all, if you have a pea-sized football brain, you're looking at Huntley going, I don't know, man. When that guy had to have it, he drove it down. And by the way, he did it against our defense. Pretty decent. And, you know, you can argue about calls or this or that or whatever. It's just disgusting. It took me a long time to get to this point now where I'm like disgusted by watching this out of frustration.
You're personally offended.
I finally, because for the longest time, I was like, I'm holding out. No way. And then what happened was, I think I watched Josh McDaniels turn it around in Vegas, and I was like, nope, I'm done. Like, I'm done. He's no more.
Unbelievable.
Okay. All right, let's move it forward, though. I mentioned him because, you know, Frank Schwab just put a pox on this guy. He's like, he's Dunn's worst coach ever. Sucks. And God, Josh McDaniels, let's go back to Tim Tebow. Rag with Josh.
And this is why I root against the Raiders every week, because I don't want to deal with this three-minute segment with you.
Exactly. What did Josh do? Josh came back and he won some games, and he is now 5-7 after a win over the Los Angeles Chargers, 27-20. He's a game behind the Chargers, who we were like, they should have a shot to win like the AFC title. Like, they could put it to, now I'm like, I don't know, man. Brandon Staley, like, okay.
That's the problem. Yeah.
There's a problem here.
Yeah. Like, Brandon Staley brought in as, you know, he had great years, the Rams defensive coordinator, and you thought, okay, year one, maybe he doesn't have his pieces for his defense, year two's going to be better, and I get that they've had some injuries, but my goodness, the Raiders were like, are we going to pick up 10 yards on a run this play or a pass this play? Because every play, there's no answer for Davante Adams. There's no answer for Josh Jacobs. And it was just kind of like, who do we want to get a first down on this play? And Brandon Staley is just, I don't know, man. I don't know. I like him. I like what he says. I like some of his theories and all that. But at some point, there's got to be results. And there's especially not on the defensive side of the ball. And that's what's troubling.
Right.
It's just not happening. Like, this is a bad defense. And it's been a bad defense. They had no answers. No answers today. Raiders, look, Josh, yes, you do great. You've turned it around. You're back. I get it. A couple overtime wins. You get this one. You're back on track. I'll take it all back. Well, kind of some of it back, I guess. Not all of it. But, yeah, the Raiders doing fine. They're kind of feisty, lingering, like, could they? Hey, I don't think they're going to win out or anything, but whatever.
Be honest, Jacobs and Adams have been a lot of fun to watch the last month and a half.
So much better than, last week, I've taken so many L's on Josh Jacobs where I just thought he was kind of, he's a solid NFL starter, whatever. No, he's probably your all-pro running back right now. Like, he's really, really, really good this week.
I know we're going to have to move on here, but let me give you a real quick parallel here that's actually kind of interesting. Way back when, early in Derrick Henry's career with the Titans, I talked to somebody inside their building, and it was the camp before his big blow up year. Mm-hmm. And my guy was like, I don't know, bro. I don't know. He's like, I think this is it for him. I don't think he's got it. I don't think he's going to be a guy who can be a centerpiece back. Said all these things, all these doubts. I feel like it was the same questions for Josh Jacobs. And then all of a sudden, Henry had that year, and he became the dude. And they were like, oh, no, he won us over. He convinced us. He's the guy. Now we build everything around this guy. And that set the to me, it set the cornerstone of what that franchise wanted to do offensively, what it wanted to be, how it wanted to move forward. And I wonder with Josh Jacobs, now I know Adams is there and he's paid him all the money and it's great and everything, but I do wonder if he has not won over a staff that did not necessarily fully believe they wanted him. And now he's potentially could become sort of a cornerstone moving forward to settle down what Josh McDaniels wants to do. On
that. Yeah, and that second contract's going to be tough, though. It always stinks.
I agree.
Not always, but mostly stinks for running backs. We'll see. Josh Jacobs certainly earned a good contract this coming up offseason. Let's move ahead to the Green Bay Packers, 28, Chicago Bears, 19. The Packers started this game really, really slow, and you're like, oh, my God, the Packers are just going to hit rock bottom in this game. They eventually came back. They won this game. I think that, look, I had to say this again. I've been excited about Justin Fields. He makes great plays. This is about the fifth time maybe this season where they've given him the ball about 2 minutes or whatever left and said, go win us the game, Justin.
He didn't do it.
And he immediately throws an interception or just they go three and out or whatever it is.
That's the thing.
He throws one today. The Packers take advantage of it. Watson hits the end around to kind of put the game away. Fields throws another interception after that. I'm not trying to bury Justin Fields because he hasn't had a fourth quarter comeback yet. But man, I'd like to see him get it done one of these times. Because every time it happens, I look up at the screen and I'm like, I'm going to make sure I'm watching this because this could be a moment for the kid. And it just doesn't happen. I want to see that happen. But otherwise, look, the Bears stink. We all know that. They're not going anywhere this year. So do the Packers for that matter. But whatever, like when Aaron Rodgers does step away, the city of Chicago might throw a parade. Like Aaron Rodgers, he talks about owning this team, and he sure does. Bears fans got to be like, can we just be done with this guy? Can we just be done with Aaron Rodgers? Because we're sick of losing to this dude.
And Rodgers was in the saddle when they took the baton. They became the all-time winningest franchise in the history of the NFL with this win over the Bears, which, you know, I give it up to Rodgers. I would want to be the quarterback for that, especially knowing how he feels about beating Chicago and everything. It's a big accomplishment for him. That's a huge accomplishment, lifetime potentially accomplishment for that franchise, and to be the quarterback who is there when maybe you take it over for good. Let's see how many decades we can run with this. Pretty wild for him. So, all right, moving on. The Pittsburgh Steelers beat the Atlanta Falcons 19-16. They're in Atlanta. I don't have a lot to say about this except to just kind of echo what you said to me last week. I watched this a lot closer because of the fact that you said this. I agree with you. Kenny Pickett is – I questioned the quarterback class this year. I questioned whether they were still kind of reaching, taking him in the first round. When I watched him in this game, and I saw – it was limited, but I saw enough – you can see they're opening the playbook for him. You can see they're like, hey, we're taking chances with you now. We're willing to throw it downfield with you now and you know, bet offensively on you more than we were before. And he's made really, really modest but consistent gains. And good for them, man, because I did not know whether or not this was going to be a reach or not. And everybody talked about the hand size. Oh, there's throws of gloves and every – like 50 million reasons. But it's Atlanta. Take it with a grain of salt, but again, I was encouraged by it, and I paid attention to him just because of what you told me last week.
Yeah, I think he's coming along pretty well, and I just, before we move on, I just want to throw a shout-out to Mike Tomlin, because people are going to be like, oh, they're 5-7, whatever. He's doing a great job this year, because you can see it in the improvement. They've won 3 of 4. This reminds me a lot about Belichick in 2020, when he had that awful roster, and he dragged them to 7-9. The same feelings about Tomlin this year. I don't think there's a very good football team. Rookie quarterback, all this kind of stuff. They got a lot of flaws, but to be 5-7 after a really miserable start to the season, you can see the improvement every week. I'm impressed. I'm impressed that the Steelers have not packed it in. They're playing hard. They're playing well. Tomlin, I think he's doing some of his better work this year. I think he's really kind of reminded everybody what a great coach he is. Let's move it ahead to shocking by the score, I'll tell you that, because we all thought the Jacksonville Jaguars might have arrived. Hey, beat Baltimore, Trevor Lawrence. Hey, yeah, they go out and get beat 40-14 by the Detroit Lions. I mean, We're not falling for the Jaguars thing again, Charles. We're not doing it. We're not. Next time the Jaguars have a somewhat decent win, I'm not going to be like, oh, Jaguars. No, they got to do this a few weeks in a row. They're just not ready to be that team. They're not ready to handle any kind of prosperity. They just got, as you put earlier, the brakes beat off of them in this game. It was embarrassing for them. The only good thing for them in this game was that Trevor Lawrence. He went down in the second quarter. And when you watch the replay and the way he went down and Doug Peterson coming out to see him, I was like, oh my God, this is the last we're going to see Trevor Lawrence this year. He's done. Yep. He's going to get carted off. And he was running out of the tunnel for the second half. I'm like, oh, wow. That impressed me. It really did. A lot of toughness there. But other than that, a really bad game for the Jaguars. And look, the Lions, 5-7 in the NFC. They're not completely out of this playoff race, man. It's not nothing in good shape, but hey, the fact that they're here after their start,
the crazy thing is, too, they got Carolina, Chicago, and Green Bay as their last three games. They should be able to compete in all three of those games. There's zero question about that.
Yeah.
Minnesota, you know, versus Minnesota at home. Now, I might normally say no, but the thing is, they were competitive with Minnesota the last time they played them. Detroit scored in games this season 40, 31, 31, 27, 45, 36, 35. What the dude, like what?
That's what makes their slump midseason so weird. When there's like 3 weeks or so, they were like zero. Like, oh, they got shut off.
Forget their slump. Still, no, I'm like, what is going on? Like, what is like? And this one, and we can move on after this. But I'm just like, do you buy? Maybe do you keep Jared Goff? Like, do you go? Like, are you gonna have a top three pick, top four pick, and go? Yeah, if even the quarterback's there. We got our quarterback. We're good. We're going to
match with Hutchinson.
Kid out of Georgia, the defensive tackle who
he's a beast. Oh,
picked up the quarterback with his left arm against LSU and just raised his hand to stop the play. I've never seen a dude pick a quarterback up and just raise his hand.
Unbelievable player.
Yeah. Detroit, man. I'm telling you.
They're fun. They're fun to watch now again.
Hey, they only need to win one more game, and I say, hey, it was a solid step forward. I think they're going to probably beat me.
They don't end up 9-8. Serious. And what if they'd beat Buffalo on Thanksgiving, which they easily could have done, way. Yeah. They were right in that game. They were talking about 6-6. They were like, ooh,
I always remember Josh Allen hugging Stephon Diggs at the end of that game, just like, man, oh my God, we almost lost that game.
They're like Rocky at the end of the first fight against Apollo. Like, ain't gonna be no rematch. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. All right, let's close it out. The Rams at home, they lose to Seattle 27-23. You know, what can you say at this point? Kenneth Walker, though, and DJ Dallas left early with injuries. Obviously, that's really, really concerning if you're Seattle. That said, I did feel like this was another one of those games where if you watched how it developed after, you know, when you lose Kenneth Walker, at this point, everybody should know how big of a deal it is that, you know, the way he functions inside that offense, how much better he makes them. Mm-hmm. When you look at this game and you look toward the end of the game, just pay attention to how Geno Smith played. Like, this is another Geno game to me. Like, I was like, he won that game in the fourth quarter for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're down. I mean, Cam Akers scores with about 250 left. It was less than 3 minutes. You're like, oh my God, this is such a bad loss for the Seahawks. You're going to lose to John Wolford and the skeleton Rams team without Aaron Donald. What are you doing? And Geno just carried them back. Like, it really was a Geno game. He played really well down the stretch, pulled this win out for them, which they absolutely needed.
Three passing touchdowns. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think both Lockett and Metcalf over 100 yards. Look, the Seahawks are worrying me because, they won, but this was not a great performance. Good win. It was fun. Geno played well. But as a team, for a team that wants to make the playoffs, this is pretty much three straight weeks of really mediocre play for Seattle. Let's see how they bounce back. I know they have an easy game next week. I can't remember who, Carolina or somebody like that, who they should beat. So we'll see where they go from here.
Kenneth Walker's got to be back. Yeah, he's got to be in there. No. That's a completely different. I'm sorry. Love Geno, and he's played amazing, but it is a two-man. I mean, it's more than a two-man offense, but for that passing game to function the way that it has, Kenneth Walker being at the top of his game, that is when they were clicking. I mean, he was beasting it. You cannot lose him. That's a big deal.
So. Totally agree there.
All right, well, let's close it out here. We'll go to our Honda Hybrid Players of the Week. As we close out our recap of Week 13, we wanted to highlight two of the league's top hybrid performances of the day, thanks to Honda and the rugged all-new CR-V Hybrid, which can run on gas, electric, or both. Frank, who was the best two-way player of the day? Who put up the best air and ground game on Sunday?
You know, Charles, I'm going to go with Packers rookie receiver Christian Watson. This guy has really arrived, and you know, we saw him do his normal thing, 3 catches, 48 yards receiving, receiving touchdown. That's what he's been doing. But then they gave him the ball on an end around that sealed the win. 46-yard touchdown, looked really explosive. Look, I'm not saying this guy's going to become Deebo Samuel necessarily, but it's like, maybe they could even incorporate this a little bit with Watson, who is a fantastic athlete and late this year is really coming on as a star player for the Green Bay Packers, not just for the rest of this year, many future years to come. Charles, who's your Honda Hybrid Player of the Week?
Mine's got to be Christian McCaffrey. I mean, obviously he takes on more importance with Jimmy Garoppolo going down for the San Francisco 49ers. But, you know, look, Sunday we saw 146 yards from scrimmage. He had 8 catches for 80 yards, 66 yards rushing. We saw earlier in the season after they acquired him from the Carolina Panthers, he can throw it too. So this is a guy who I think fills all those hybrid boxes. And, you know, again, I think with Jimmy Garoppolo going down, they're going to have to find different ways to use him. And he slides right into the perfect hybrid role for a team that really loves hybrid players. So that's it for our hybrid players of the week. Thanks to Honda and the all-new rugged CR-V hybrid, which can run on gas, electric, or both. All right, Franklin, you want to tell us, I think you said you led winners and losers with
Lamar Jackson, the best contract year of his life.
That's right.
So, you know, that did that. Got power rankings coming in. This week, going to be writing after talking with our NFL editor, Joey, a little bit of a butterfly effect story of how the Denver Broncos situation would be different if they drafted Justin Fields instead of Patrick Surtain. Man, it's interesting, Charles. Just read it. Keep an open mind.
We love those butterfly effect stories.
The butterfly effect is great, man. Like, I love it. I'm a big believer.
Yeah. Only things
don't kill a bug because, you know, stuff of 10 years from now is going to be completely different. That's a real thing, dude.
Frank would have hair.
maybe. There's probably something I did when I was 8 years old that screwed up the follicles. Yeah.
And I'd be 40 pounds lighter.
What you got going on the rest of this week, Charles?
Well, look, I obviously spent the day with the Texans and Browns just to kind of see what it looked like with Watson out there. I think moving forward, you know, at some point we're going to have to look at San Francisco and kind of address what does the Jimmy G injury mean, not only for the season, but how does this kind of remix things moving forward? Because now you have two guys who, you know, were supposed to be your starter between he and Trey Lance, both suffered, you know, injuries that end their season and kind of puts them back at square one next year. Who's going to be healthy? When are they going to be healthy? How does this affect the fact that Jimmy G becomes a free agent when this season ends? I mean, it's
going
just
into free agency with another significant injury. I mean, he wasn't a free agent this past offseason, but you know what I mean?
He wasn't, but I mean, that's been the bugaboo about him, right? I mean, it was just like, he's just, his availability was always a problem. And I think it frustrated Kyle Shanahan. I don't think this will help. So I think that's another thing we'll have to look at. And then, you know, maybe at some point, probably poke my head in on the Odell Beckham Jr. situation and be like, what the hell's going on here? Because we were told, first it was going to be around Thanksgiving and then it goes beyond Thanksgiving and he's doing all these visits. And then it's like, how much is he actually asking for and what can he contribute? And this whole thing feels a heck of a lot more fluid than it did way back when we just thought, oh, he's going to sign with a team. He's going to be on the field and contribute a couple of games at the end and then be there for the playoffs. I don't know about that, man. It feels pretty shaky.
I will say this, by the way, you asked me before, like, who do I take, Philly or Dallas? If you put Odell Beckham on Dallas, that might change my mind because I think he could. Look, we don't know where he's at health-wise.
Yeah,
yet,
we don't know what he looks like.
Man, if he has the impact he did for the Rams last year, that is a game changer in the NFC.
Not even working out for teams yet. So I don't even know. What does that mean? Anyway, we'll see. All right, so we're moving in. Man, getting into December. It's getting short. We're going to do a lot of content down the stretch. I'm looking forward to it. So help us keep Therese Paylor's legacy alive. If you can, check out BreakingTee.com/Therese for the All Juice Tea or hoodie. Remember, the proceeds from that purchase go to support the Therese A. Paylor Scholarship at Howard University and also the scholarship in his name at Power Mizzou. If you want to support those directly, check out the podcast description. It's getting to be December. The college season wrapped up. We still got the bowl games left, but it's about time to start kicking around all juice team candidates and, forming that team. So definitely check out those tees and hoodies. It's going to be that season pretty soon. If you could, give us some 5-star reviews, tell a friend, grow the pod, grow the family. As always, we always look forward to having new people to torture with some of Frank's horrible predictions and everybody he buries immediately turning it around and going on a heater. But if you could, again, help us bring people in the fold, we really appreciate it. Be back Wednesday night with a new episode. Talk to you then. Peace.